The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today, we are filing a federal civil rights lawsuit against the state of North Carolina, Governor Pat McCrory, the North Carolina Department of Public Safety, and the University of North Carolina. We are seeking a court order declaring HB2's restroom restriction impermissibly discriminatory, as well as a statewide bar on its enforcement.
So there you have it. It's impermissibly discriminatory for North Carolina to pass a law that says if you're a biological male, you need to use the male restroom. That was Loretta Lynch, the U.S. Attorney General. And as you heard there, they're filing lawsuit against North Carolina, the governor, against the state regarding this bathroom law, as it's called. The Justice Department says the law stigmatizes and singles out transgender employees, and it results in their isolation and exclusion, and perpetuates a sense that they're not worthy of equal treatment and respect. So never mind those who are terrorized by perverts who take advantage of this madness. That's really what it is. It's just madness. And there are those who are already taking advantage of it. But as I was saying a couple of weeks ago, that's where we are today. We've got to fight for the rights of transgender individuals. This is another clip here from Loretta Lynch.
They created state-sponsored discrimination against transgender individuals who simply seek to engage in the most private of functions in a place of safety and security, a right taken for granted by most of us.
The NBC report that was filed on this latest round in the fight between the feds and North Carolina, it says here, the divisive new law has already led to a nationwide fallout, and multi-billion-dollar companies continue to withdraw investment from the state as some residents decamp to friendlier locations. Founders and chief executives of more than 100 companies, including Apple, Twitter, and Alphabet, urged McCrory to repeal the legislation, while high-profile entertainers like Bruce Springsteen and Pearl Jam have canceled appearances in North Carolina. I told you 2 weeks ago about the PayPal hypocrisy and its CEO that says this law somehow violates the values and principles of PayPal's mission, even though they've got offices in Malaysia, offices in Singapore, offices in Dubai. And in all of those places, I mean, you have not just cross-dressers, you have homosexuals that are put in jail. Some can be put in jail if they're just caught in the act of homosexuality, even if it's in a private room. PayPal has no problem with that. But like I said a couple weeks ago, the bad guy here is North Carolina. And of course, the schools there, the public schools, are also very concerned that the U.S. government could withdraw. We're talking about billions of dollars of funding. So they're getting it from every angle, from businesses, now from this government brought on by the Department of Justice. The president himself has spoken out strong against North Carolina. Here's one last statement from Loretta Lynch.
What this law does is inflict further indignity on a population that has already suffered far more than its fair share. This law provides no benefit to society, and all it does is harm innocent Americans.
That's all it does. It just harms Americans, she says. And so here's where we are today. San Francisco values now permeate every major decision made by the American government. That's what my father wrote in 2006. Today, we're fighting for the rights of transgenders, forgetting about innocent victims. And no doubt the numbers of innocent victims will multiply significantly. There's already a number of reports coming in from local newspapers. The national press isn't going to pick it up, you can be sure of that, because it doesn't fit within the agenda here. But there's already multiple reports at the local level of, as I say, perverts taking advantage of this madness. Men waltzing right into a woman's restroom, bathroom, locker room. Never mind those who are terrorized by that sort of thing. It's pretty amazing how far we've fallen from truth, from a relatively high standard of morality going back to the founding of the United States. My freshman year in college, we went through Alan Bloom's book. That was a book that came out in 1987. It's an amazing book. It had an impact on me as a young freshman, an 18-year-old. His classic work, The Closing of the American Mind. And here, I mean, this is someone, I think he died in 1992. He identified himself as a liberal. And yet you read his book, and you see just how far to the radical left the liberal movement has swung, and he saw it. Even a great liberal thinker of his day, he saw it. He saw what it was doing to the university environment. The influence of this liberal socialist ideology, what it was doing to our young people, how it was impacting our society. He said, there's one thing a professor can be absolutely certain of. Almost every student entering the university believes, or says he believes, that truth is relative. That's what they come into school believing, and so they get it from the early years of school right on up, and then it is reinforced at the university level. Truth is relative. Moral relativism. Mr. Bloom wrote, they have all been equipped with this framework early on, and it is the modern replacement for the inalienable natural rights that used to be the traditional American grounds for a free society. The danger they have been taught to fear from absolutism is not error, but intolerance. That's what you have to fear. Not errors or getting the facts wrong or falling for lies. The only thing you have to fear is intolerance. That's the danger. That's the real danger you've got to be on the lookout for. Intolerance. Relativism, he says, is necessary to openness. And this is the virtue, the only virtue, which all primary education for more than 50 years has dedicated itself to inculcating. Now, as I said, he wrote that in 1987. And you'll note there that he said at that time, this has been going on for 50 years. For 50 years, the founders of America have been discredited. You tack on another 30 years, as we're almost 30 years on from when Mr. Bloom wrote his book. You're talking about a full century almost. This discrediting of the founders, this idea that's now entrenched, firmly entrenched in the world of academia, even 50 years prior to 1987. Mr. Bloom writes, students now arrive at the university ignorant and cynical about our political heritage, lacking the wherewithal to be either inspired by it or seriously critical of it. They just come in ignorant, and all that they can do is criticize. Criticize the government, criticize the founders. They were immoral. They were racist. They were this. They were that. We are righteous because we're tolerant. We are righteous because truth is relative. Truth is ever-changing. Here again, I keep coming back to this puff piece at the New York Times over the weekend about Ben Rhodes just glorifying lies and deceit as if it's a virtue. Students now arrive ignorant and cynical about their political heritage. That's the university life today. It's amazing when you just step back and look at the history of the past century, the past 70 or 80 years, and you see what kind of leadership is there in the White House today. What kind of leaders are leading the United States today? America is definitely under attack, as our booklet by that name clearly shows. But in so many ways, Barack Obama and the young scholars in his administration, they're just simply the products of an educational system that's gone wrong. An educational system that has long been hostile to the beliefs and the teachings of the founders. An educational system that is anti-God, that is hostile to the truth of God. I mean, really, the current administration is just simply the culmination of a century, nearly a century of hard work by radical Marxist professors. You could say the ground for this administration was prepared long ago, decades ago, generations ago. And Alan Bloom, a professed liberal, he saw what was happening. And he sounded an alarm back in 1987, but no one listened. He wrote, intractable good and evil cause infinite distress like war and sexual repression, which is almost instantly relieved when more flexible values are introduced. One need not feel bad about or uncomfortable with oneself when just a little value adjustment's necessary. And this longing to shuck off constraints and have one peaceful, happy world is the first of the affinities between our real American world and that of German philosophy in its most advanced form. Of course, Bloom attributed this 20th century rise of value relativism in American education. He attributed that to the influence of German rationalism from the late 19th and early 20th centuries. He talks about the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, who practically obliterated the idea that there's good and evil, that there's right and wrong. And up until the 20th century, that's what had been taught traditionally in the American educational system. There is right and wrong. There is good and evil, and it's based on what the Bible says. But not anymore. I mean, why should we feel guilty? Why should we feel conflicted? Why should we be uncomfortable? When if you just make a little value adjustment, everything's okay. Everything's just fine. Today, it's all about values. And of course, those values are changing dramatically. Let me play for you what the White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said about this latest round in the fight between the feds and North Carolina.
The position of the North Carolina government has not changed. They're asserting that this mean-spirited law is somehow consistent with the Civil Rights Act in with our values. The Department of Justice has obviously spoken to its compliance with the law given their enforcement role. So for questions about that, I'd refer you to the Department of Justice. And I think the President has spoken pretty powerfully to the idea that what the state of North Carolina has passed in a one-day special session is inconsistent with the values of fairness and equality and justice that we hold dear in this country. And I think it should be evident from the response of the business community that what the North Carolina government has done is inconsistent with the best interests of the people of North Carolina and the economy of North Carolina. That obviously will be something that North Carolina officials will have to deal with. But there's been a reluctance on the part of businesses that had previously committed to expanding the amount of business that they do in North Carolina from engaging with a government that just makes it easier to discriminate against their employees and potential customers.
The one reference there to law, you'll notice he described it as mean-spirited. This is a mean-spirited law. And he used consistent or inconsistent a number of times. This is not consistent with our values. This is not consistent with the people's best interests. This is not consistent with the values of fairness, equality, justice. I mean, people are being discriminated against. That statement that I just played for you, that statement is loaded with value relativism. It's just oozing with what Professor Bloom talked about in 1987. There is no right or wrong. There is no right or wrong behavior. We've just got to be consistent with our values. And those values, in case you haven't noticed, they're so much worse than they were just a few months ago, just a few years ago. This is exactly what Professor Bloom was talking about in 1987. Get rid of good and evil, which is what Nietzsche wanted, and just come down to these syrupy-sounding terms, values, fairness, justice, equality. These are words, for the most part, that the founders didn't use. They did use equality, but when the founders talked about equality, when Professor Bloom talked about equality, they talked about it in the traditional American sense. Equality of opportunity. Equality of opportunity. Today, the leftist idea, the radical leftist idea, is that of equality of outcome. Social justice, in other words. You remember the clip from yesterday we played from President Obama's speech on Saturday, where he talked about his pet peeve. People who've experienced success and how that they don't realize they've been lucky. They've been lucky. And others haven't been so lucky. And so we've got to let them out of prison. And so we've got to send them more welfare checks so that we can even the playing field, so that everyone can experience equality of outcome. That's the liberal socialist thinking. That's the Marxist influence. Professor Bloom said this: in politics, in entertainment, in religion, everywhere, we find the language connected with Nietzsche's value revolution, a language necessitated by a new perspective on the things of most concern to us, words such as charisma, lifestyle, commitment, identity, and many others, all of which can easily be traced to Nietzsche and are now practically American slang, although they and the things to which they refer would have been incomprehensible to our fathers, not to speak of our founding fathers. They would have been incomprehensible to our own physical fathers just a generation ago. not to speak of our founding fathers. What would they think? What would George Washington think? What would John Adams think? What would Thomas Jefferson think? What would James Madison think of the Department of Justice filing suit against the state of North Carolina because they passed a law saying that men need to go to the men's restroom and women go to the women's restroom? Well, as I say, Professor Bloom hit the nail on the head. Look at how far down we've gone into the cesspool of immorality. I mean, Bloom was writing about it, giving a first-hand account, going back to his days at the University of Chicago in the 40s as a student. And he saw these changes, these dramatic changes happening in his own lifetime. This moral revolution through the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s, and then he wrote about it in 1987. Herbert Armstrong was another one who gave a first-hand account. If you've read his material, you know he had a lot to say about education, the problem with it, modern education, about the sexual revolution, about the new morality. He said in the Wonderful World Tomorrow book, the 19th and 20th centuries have witnessed the absorption of German rationalism into the educational bloodstream, an approach that regards human reason as the chief source and test of knowledge. Human reason. There's been a dangerous drift into materialism and collectivism. God is ignored. Revelation is rejected. Human reason is the chief source and test of knowledge. And so that's what Josh Earnest was expressing there. Look, we've got to humanly reason this out. This goes against the best interest of the people of North Carolina. This is not consistent with values, with justice, with fairness. It's not fair. And that message resonates with a lot of people, because so many people have come through the same educational system where this kind of thinking is established early on in the minds of youngsters. And by the time they arrive at college, well, read Professor Bloom's book, as he describes some of the students that he was trying to teach in the 1980s. This period that, according to President Obama from his speech Saturday, was so much worse than what it is today. Today, I mean, we have so much tolerance. We have so much opportunity for homosexuals, for transgenders. If we can just straighten this thing out with North Carolina and Mississippi, boy, we've come a long way. It's like another civil rights movement. That's what they say, when in fact it's just one giant step further away from God and His truth, away from any concept of good and evil, away from any concept of right and wrong. There is no right and wrong. Do whatever, be whoever you want to be, whether you think you're a man or a woman, live your lifestyle. You choose your identity. It's your lifestyle. It's your commitment, after all. And we'll just make sure that we all subscribe to the one law of thou shalt not discriminate, of thou shalt not be intolerant. That's what's being taught to our young people in schools today. There is a missing dimension in education, for sure. It's a huge, huge missing component. I want to take you through a few verses in Romans chapter 1, which has a lot to say about the problem with modern education. They've kicked God out of school. They've kicked any Bible principles. They've kicked them right out of school. And notice what Paul says here in the book of Romans and chapter 1. It says, verse 19, "For what can be known about God," or rather, let me read this in the King James. It says, "Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them." See, they can know. You can just look around and see in God's creation. His fingerprints are all over it. If we just open our eyes, verse 20, "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." They're without excuse if they reject God and his existence, if they reject God's revelation, if they reject the truth of the Bible. I mean, it can be clearly seen, God's presence and power. The heavens declare his glory, it says in the Psalms. If people would just look into God's creation, so much about God is revealed just in that. Verse 21 in the Revised Standard says, "For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their senseless minds were darkened." They became futile in their thinking. And yet look at man today, so proud of his trifling accomplishments, so proud of this progress, quote unquote. So proud at how much evil we accommodate, we tolerate, we accept. Verse 22, "Professing themselves to be wise, they become fools," or they became fools. Mr. Armstrong wrote in the Wonderful World Tomorrow book, he said, "In modern education, we find perpetuation of false values, the teaching of distorted history, warped psychology, perverted arts and sciences, worthless knowledge." I mean, he's writing this back in the 1960s. It's great revisiting Professor Bloom, but you want to go back to someone who was way ahead of his time. You read the Wonderful World Tomorrow book. You read The Missing Dimension in Sex. You read God Speaks Out on the New Morality. And it tells you everything you need to know about why it is the way it is today, where we are, what we're fighting for. He says here, "This has led to the multiplication of colleges of creative studies, which might better be called colleges of undisciplined studies, where lectures are eschewed as bourgeois and students educate themselves in rap sessions." That's the result of this influence of German rationalism. That's the result of German thinkers like Nietzsche working their way into the university system, those ideas anyway. That's the result of value relativism. Verse 24, "Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves." God just gave them up. Does that sound like God's trying to change this world and make it a better place? Or does that sound like we're making progress with each passing year? Now that we're in 2016, oh, it's so much better than 1983. We were so intolerant back then. We wouldn't accept all these alternative lifestyles. We subscribe to the thinking of, well, there's a few things that are right and wrong. But now, I mean, everything has toppled. Now there's no barriers. In so many ways, well, you still listen to the average liberal socialist today. And believe me, they have a lot of other targets that they're aiming for. There's no limit on how far down they want to go. The Bible says it's going to be just like Sodom and Gomorrah. Just before the day that Jesus Christ returns to this earth, wherefore God gave them up to uncleanness. Verse 25 says, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creation more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. And for this cause, verse 26 says, God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. Even something this perverse, the women changed their natural use into something that goes against even nature. Even nature should tell you this. Even God's creation should show you this. But you reject God. You stop glorifying Him as Creator. And well, what does the Bible say? He gives you up to vile affections. He gives you up to uncleanness. Go ahead. If that's what you're just obsessed with, then go ahead and let it run its course. See where it takes you. Verse 27, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet. God said all of this would happen. I mean, that verse doesn't need any commentary. Even the King James writers, even centuries ago, sometimes when the subject is sex in the Bible, when you go back a few centuries, they can use language, the translators that worked under King James, the translators can use words that maybe aren't as direct or as expressive as they should have been. But here's a case where it's very straightforward, isn't it? Men with men, burning in their lust, one toward another. Verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, to do those things that aren't right. Reprobate thinking, that means a mind without understanding or a mind void of judgment. That's what it says in the margin. If you want to look into the King James margin, if you have a King James, God's not yet setting out to save this world. He's preparing a bride for His Son. And meanwhile, the world, you could say it's going through a school of hard knocks. It's learning that its own ways, apart from God's ways, lead to destruction. Verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. This is human nature in all of its ugly colors. This is why these three verses. This is why God labels our world the present evil world. That's from Galatians 1, and he says that human nature is just going to make things worse and worse and worse. That's 2 Timothy 3. It says in verse 32, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. The Revised Standard says, but approve those who practice them. In other words, those who consent to wrong, to evil, to sinful behavior, they're just as guilty as the ones out there committing the act. Exodus 23 says, don't follow a multitude to do evil. Don't just follow along. And yet, isn't that the way it's been? Look, Alan Bloom, as I said, was a liberal thinker. But from 1987, 30 years on, look at where the liberal movement is. Look at where the so-called conservative movement is. Look at the direction of the whole society. Let me play for you an exchange. This is from, this is a caller calling into a prominent conservative voice in the United States, Laura Ingraham. She has a radio show each morning. I've listened to her over the years a number of times. But notice what she says in response to someone who called in and had some real concerns about the character of the political candidate, Donald Trump.
The problem I have with this whole thing, Laura, is that Donald Trump as a person violates every moral principle that I've been raised with and raised to believe. And I don't see how I can support a guy when to support him would be like selling my soul.
Okay. So on what particular issues?
Well, let's see. He's immoral, multiple adulterer, philanderer, boasts about his promiscuity and his sexual degradation of women.
So Reagan was divorced, right? So you don't believe in divorce, obviously, right?
Well, no.
Okay, Reagan was divorced, right?
Reagan was divorced.
Do you think any president that did great things for the country had moral failings? Do you think, you know, Lincoln suspended habeas corpus, for goodness sakes? We had hundreds of thousands slaughtered in one of the most vicious. You know, we can. I mean, Lincoln was an amazing man, and we owe him so much. But remember, he had to do some really immoral things also to win the Civil War for the union of the country. They had to make choices, and so morality is. We're not picking a church leader. We're picking someone who can guide the country away from this globalist disaster that we've gotten ourselves into, who can fix our, or at least get us down the road to fixing our debt bomb, disarming our debt bomb. So I understand you're upset about Trump. I get it. I understand it. But all of the holy rollers on Capitol Hill, for all those people we've elected who are, you know, pure as the driven snow, all these years later, we have 50 million abortions, gay marriage is the law of the land, and we have a social construct that is very foreign to a lot of Americans who are listening right now. So we've had the purists in office, and what did that actually get us?
So what good is it to fight for morality, to fight for what's right and wrong, to fight for what should be clearly good versus evil? We're not picking a church leader, she says. We've just got to end globalism. And look, some of these others, they weren't really moral either. What kind of a stretch was that? Abraham Lincoln and Donald Trump, well, they both had their moral failings. And Ronald Reagan, he got a divorce. What's the big deal? Trump's going to end globalism. That's all you need to know. Character no longer matters. Not at all, not from either side of the aisle. Not when the stakes are this high as far as political policy is concerned. Ann Coulter, she's also in the conservative wing. She tweeted out, I don't care if Donald Trump wants to perform abortions in the White House, as long as he follows through on the immigration policy. So for her, it's all immigration. Forget about abortions, forget about this, forget about that. It's not worth fighting for. I mean, we've had the purists in office. And where has that gotten us? What's the point? Now, these same voices, I know there's a certain, you know, minority, I should say, in the conservative or the Republican Party that are very upset because the majority have just given up on fighting for what's right and wrong, on fighting for morality. But still, they're a tiny minority, and it's getting smaller by the year. But look, just to demonstrate, or to show us how dramatic this change has been, this following a multitude to do evil, giving consent to it, even if you're not involved in it, like Paul says yourself, but you're approving of those who practice these abominable acts. You go back 15, 20 years, and I'll tell you that Miss Ingram and Coulter, they were singing a different tune, just appalled and shocked by what was happening in the White House at the end of the 1990s. Appalled at the behavior of a U.S. president who was bringing the entire country down as far as morality goes. Well, back then, it's not just these two examples I give you. It was the general sentiment all across the United States. When in the mid-90s, for example, a majority of Americans said they were really concerned about all the sex violence, the profanity on TV and movies and popular culture. The majority was very concerned. Now, we've talked about TV today, just in the last few weeks. And that New York Post article that says each program that comes out is trying to take it a step lower to shock people. To shock people in an attempt to get more viewers. Well, back in the 90s, there was near unanimous agreement that television had way too much sex, violence. 83%. Of those surveyed at that time said the entertainment industry should make a serious effort to reduce sex and violence in movies, in music, in TV. Has that happened? It's so much worse today in 2016. I mean, you have to strain. You have to search long and far and wide just to find something that's appropriate for your family. 68% said that if the industry would make these changes, that it could even improve the moral climate in America. Like I said, if you're a fan of talk radio, imagine what they would have been saying in 1998, 1999, when you had all of this craziness, all of this gross immorality being celebrated in the White House. A few weeks after President Clinton's impeachment trial, he was impeached, but he certainly wasn't run out of office. And he's a pretty prominent figure in politics today, in case you haven't noticed. His wife in particular. But at the time of that impeachment trial, this is from early 1999, Paul Weyrich, who is the head of the Conservative Free Congress Foundation in Washington, he said, "I no longer believe that there is a moral majority. I do not believe that a majority of Americans actually share our values." I mean, if they did, Clinton would have been driven from office. And then Weyrich said this, and again, this is from 1999, so we're talking 17 years ago, almost a generation. "The culture that we're living in becomes an ever wider sewer. In truth, I think we're caught up in a cultural collapse of historic proportions. A collapse so great that it simply overwhelms politics." Isn't that the truth? Look at where we are today. We're in the midst of a collapse so great that politics has been overwhelmed. And now you even have prominent conservative voices saying, "What's the point of even putting up a fight? What's the point?" She says derisively about putting in the holy rollers, about putting in the purists. What's the point of fighting for morality? Let's just get rid of globalism. Let's just try to reduce the debt levels. Well, you can't argue with that. I mean, okay, let's deal with the problems that America's facing. But how come so many prominent so-called conservative voices have given up in the culture war? How come they don't see a connection between implementing some of these said policies and character? How come they don't see it? Of course, every leader, every good leader in history has had personal failings. But to compare Lincoln with Donald Trump, really? How come they don't see it? The direct connection between character and good leadership. Well, because they've gone through the same system, the same educational system that Professor Bloom's students went through. And everyone's been made to adjust their values, some more than others, but for the most part, everyone's just gone along. Who, knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but they have pleasure in them that do them. They approve of those who practice them. It's just overwhelmed politics, this ever wider sewer. It's a cultural collapse of historic proportions. Weyrich went on to say here, I don't have all the answers or even all the questions, but I know that what we've been doing for 30 years hasn't worked. And while we've been fighting and winning in politics, our culture has decayed into something approaching barbarism. Well, now there's more that have that same sentiment. We've been fighting, but it hasn't worked. We've won a few political matches, but now that's all that matters. That's all that it boils down to. Just win the fight against globalism. Just put up the wall, and we'll be all right with it. This is what we've been reduced to. It's just overwhelmed politics, and to see just how devastating and overwhelming this cultural collapse has been. Well, you need only look at what's happening right now in the Department of Justice in its fight against North Carolina. The DOJ fighting for the rights of deranged perverts to go into the public bathroom of their choice. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, and the live stream's available at thetrumpet.com. We've got a few minutes left, so we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back to wrap things up.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
I think I read this quote to you a few weeks ago, what Mr. Armstrong said in his book, The Missing Dimension in Sex, about this cultural collapse, this attack on family. I mean, it's an anti-family culture, an anti-traditional family culture that we're now living in, where the bizarre is made out to be like it's just normal. It's just normal. He said, since it's a basic truism that a solid family structure is the foundational bulwark of any stable and permanent society, this fact means only one thing. Civilization as we know it is on the way down and out. Unless that great unseen strong hand from someplace soon intervenes and saves today's sick society. That's Herbert Armstrong writing long before Alan Bloom. That's him writing back in the 1960s about our sick society. And today we've witnessed a cultural collapse of historic proportions. It's so great that it simply overwhelms politics. He said in The Missing Dimension, but before we leave the world of the 80s, bear in mind, this is the last version of that book that was distributed in 1981. He said that the world is in revolt. And then later, today, the family structure of Western life is endangered by much more than illicit and promiscuous sex. It's in danger. It's being attacked. Satan views the family as the prime target he's aiming for, because he knows God is a family. And so he's working at every level to undermine the God family, to undermine the institution of family, to turn society upside down. In Isaiah 1, let me just roll through a couple more scriptures before we close. God says in verse 4, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the eternal. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward." That's really the direction that we're going. It's not progressing. We're going backward. And we're provoking God to anger because of this backward slide. Verse 5 says, "Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick." That's what Mr. Armstrong was talking about. Our sick society. The whole head is sick. The whole heart faint from the sole of the foot, even unto the head. There's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. And so God warns our peoples. He says, this is what's happened. This is where it's leading. And this is what you need to do to turn it around. Notice verse 10. It says, "Hear the word of the Eternal, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah." Now, this was obviously written long after Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed anciently. So who could this refer to? Who could this be talking about? "Hear the word of God, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the law of God, you people of Gomorrah." God here is likening our society to that of Sodom and Gomorrah. Just as Jesus did in the Gospels. How clear, how plain this is. It's no wonder that in the universities they want to kick the Bible out. Well, God, as I say, He gives the solution. Verse 18 says, "Come now and let us reason together, says the Eternal." Reason together. Well, you'll hear a lot about reasoning in the world of academia. But if it's going to get anywhere, we have to bring God into the discussion, and we have to let God guide it. We have to reason together with God, get to know God and His Word. This is the only way that we'll learn to think like He does, that we'll understand what's right and wrong, what's good and evil, that we'll find solutions to our many problems. Get to know God, reasoning together with God. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on yet another program. This is on 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond. The live stream's at our website. Don't forget to email us as the week unfolds. Send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.